From the campus of Salt Lake Community College in Salt Lake City, the Utah Debate Commission welcomes you to the 4th Congressional District Candidates Debate.
I'm Ken Verdoyan, and welcome to the Miller campus of Salt Lake Community College for one of the most anticipated exchanges sponsored by the Utah Debate Commission during this 2016 election season. Tonight we gather for a debate between candidates in Utah's 4th Congressional District, and our debate is a rematch of an exchange that took place 2 years ago. Tonight we will hear from the Republican candidate, the incumbent, Representative Mia Love, and the Democratic candidate, Doug Owens. Each candidate receives a 90-second opportunity for an opening statement, and prior to airtime, it was determined Doug Owens would have the first opportunity. Mr. Owens.
Well, good evening, everybody, and I want to thank the Debate Commission for organizing this event, Ken for moderating, Congresswoman Love for being here. Thank you. I want to thank Salt Lake Community College. This is one awesome institution. They educate 60,000 young Utahns and give them a great launch into life. I'm proud to be here. I want to tell you why I'm running. You know, my dad came from a little town in southern Utah called Panguitch. He was the youngest of 9 children born in a one-bedroom house. My grandfather had lost his farm in the Depression, so my dad grew up dirt poor. He did not have a toothbrush until he was 15. But he believed in the American dream, and so at 18, he came up to Salt Lake City, and he got a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken. And with that job, he was able to put himself through the University of Utah. I know you students here at Salt Lake Community College aren't able to do that. You're taking on heavy student loans. I am running because we need to keep college affordable and every other pathway that people follow to get into the kind of living wage jobs, the kind of jobs they can raise their family on. It's critical that we hang on to every one of those pathways. So that's college, that's job training, that's making sure everybody thrown out of work in the middle age gets an opportunity to get back into a living wage job. That's why I'm running, to fight for you, and I appreciate again the chance to be here. Thank you, Ken, for moderating.
Mr. Owens, and now a 90-second opportunity for Representative Mia Love. Representative?
Thank you, Ken. Thank you to all the students that are here today, and thank you to all of those that are watching from home today. I know it's easy to take in the doom and gloom of the daily news, but I want you to know that I have confidence in our nation. I have been able to work with the 4th District, and I've worked with extraordinary people. People like Gordon Yule, who is here with me today. Gordon Yule was severely injured in combat while serving in Iraq. Thank you, Gordy, for everything that you've done for us. We owe you a great deal of gratitude. There are a lot of people that believe that we can't solve our problems because we're too divided as a nation. And although I disagree quite often with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, I think there's more that actually unites us than divides us. I've been able to host several of them here in our state to show them what we do as a community to elevate people who are striving for a better life. We've made so much progress that we've been able to bring people to come along with us. People like David Scott, a Democrat in the United States House, who has endorsed this campaign. That hasn't happened in heaven knows how long. It's because David Scott knows that the issues that we face aren't just left or right issues. They're American family issues. I think it's time that we elevate the conversation past the politics to the solutions that are going to help our Utah families. I hope that we can do that tonight. Thank you.
The Utah Debate Commission has established a format that allows each candidate 90 seconds for an initial reply to a question. These questions were drawn from voter input to the Utah Debate Commission website. And other questions will come from our audience here, including students from Salt Lake Community College. Each candidate will also have rebuttal time to speak directly to the views of their opponent on each question. So let's begin. How can we ignore this one? The last 5 days have represented a new level of intensity in the spirited debate over the qualifications of candidates standing to serve as the next president of the United States. Throughout the nation, people are beginning political conversations with, "I could never vote for," and then they fill in that blank. What are the values you are looking for in the next president, and who best represents those values in 2016? Representative Love, the first 90-second opportunity.
Well, as being the only woman in the delegation, it's incredibly difficult to deal with the environment in a male-dominated Congress, but I'm from Utah, and comments and different things like that roll off my back. However, the past weekend has really given us an insight as to what is really at stake here in Washington. Let me give you an example. For too long, our members of Congress have given their power away. Our members of Congress have been, our people in Utah and around the nation have been looking to Washington for the answers. Now is the time that we need to look within. Now, I've stood very firm and have not endorsed Donald Trump, and I certainly have not endorsed Hillary Clinton. Now is the time for us to make sure that we have a balance of powers to the administration. Now is the time to make sure that Nancy Pelosi isn't the Speaker of the House, that we do everything we can to make sure there's a check and balance in Washington, because it's time to restore Utah's voice back in and make sure that we are concentrating on us and what we need to do to restore the people's voice back into Washington.
I don't mean to be naive, but you seem to have injected none of the above as a box to check. And I want to ask you once again, does a candidate represent your values in 2016?
Well, I can tell you right now, Hillary Clinton doesn't represent my values. Donald Trump doesn't represent my values. I have been looking into the other candidates, and, you know, again, this is, I have not closed the door on the other candidates, but there's still some time left, so I'm open.
You have clarified. Mr. Owens, your response.
Yes, you know, I don't look for values to national politics. I look here at home, and I know that many people have struggled with this issue in the presidential. I think there's been too much focus there. I ran for Congress not to play in the presidential race, but to do what I could for Utah. You know, six generations of my family have called this place home, seven if you count my kids who are here tonight. I am in this to do what I can for Utah. Now, I have said I am voting for my party's nominee, but that's not, I have not endorsed any candidate. I am not participating in any race. I am trying to do what I can for Utah. And so I don't look there for values. I think we need to take our values to Washington. You know, I think of people like firefighters who have endorsed my candidacy. Those are guys who run to the problem. If we had more of those kind of values in Congress, if we could roll up our sleeves and get the job done, that's the kind of values we need to take there. I think of teachers who are really struggling. You know, my mother was a teacher. She put her heart and soul into her job. She used her own salary to help pay for the materials in her classroom. Those are the kind of people who are populating our school system and are educating our children. That's where I'd look for values, and those are the kinds of things I'd want to take to Washington. I think it's important that when you look at the presidential race, it's all the more important to pick the person who can go to Washington and take our values there and do what's right for us.
Apparently, I missed the distribution of 10-foot poles that occurred just before part of the debate, because I've never been with two candidates in a debate setting where neither candidate would publicly endorse the top of their national ticket in a presidential election year. Representative Love, I'm going to come back to you one more time. What are we hearing about the American state of politics that you two feel you cannot endorse your own top of the ticket?
Well, I said that I wouldn't endorse, and I am not going to vote for the two nominees at the top of the ticket. However, I think it's important that when we say we're actually going to vote for somebody, especially when you're a member of Congress, there are people that are looking to you, and that you become that example. And so I find it really interesting that my opponent says that he's voting for Hillary Clinton. This is a person that has lied to the American people. This is a person that took their email servers and hid them. This is a person that left soldiers in Benghazi on their own and did absolutely nothing. And so again, I'm actually sticking with my district and sticking to the issues that my district is supporting, and I'm not looking to Washington as an example. We're looking right here.
Doug Owens, you get 45 seconds to respond on this topic.
I've indicated how I'm going to vote. I what's more important is how I'm going to vote when I get to Washington. I can work with the president of either party if they're doing what's right for our state. I can hold them accountable if they're, no matter which party they're from, when they're not doing what's right for our state. That's why I'm in this race. It has nothing to do with national party politics. I think people back in Washington are entirely too stuck on party labels, on the kind of nonsense, the race to the bottom that we've seen in the presidential. I was talking to one guy over the weekend who said it was like a nightmare he couldn't wake up from. But I think it's all the more important that you get focused on this race and what either of us can do for Utah.
Let's move on to our next topic then. A series of recent national surveys by major print and broadcast entities revealed deep-seated concern in the hearts and minds of average Americans on two general topics, the economy and national security. Now, we have students standing by that will pepper you with questions on the economy. But at this point, please turn your attention to national security. Because of acts of domestic terrorism, Americans are expressing concern for their own safety in their home states and in their home communities. Short of declaring a police state, how do we fight terrorism on our own shores without trampling the principles of justice? And Mr. Owens, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Thank you. You know, the highest priority for me is keeping Americans safe at home. That is absolute top priority. You know, I think that it's incumbent on Congress to give the military, to give the FBI, to give the immigration authorities all the resources they need to make sure that people coming into this country are safe and that we are safe at home. That's absolute top priority for me. It's clear when you look around the world and you see an expansionist Russia, an expansionist China, you see trouble in the Middle East and domestically, as you say, Ken. It's all the more important that Congress go to work to make sure we are giving our military and our police the resources they need to combat terror. You know, domestically, it's interesting. If you look at those last three incidents of domestic terror, all three of those guys had come up on law enforcement radar before the incidents. Law enforcement, for various reasons, had not gone after them. I think it's incumbent on us to examine those incidents to make sure that the police and every other authority I've mentioned has the resources they need to keep us safe. That's Congress's job.
And Representative Love, your response on the subject of keeping Americans safe at home from acts of terror.
Okay, well, there is no question that we have a serious problem in our country. A poll that was published last year showed that 47% of Americans are fearful that they will be the victims or a loved one will be the victims of terrorist activities. For years, the administration has been gutting our military. Now, I believe that the world will see peace when we are a beacon of strength. And when you're gutting the military, as the administration has for the past 7 years, it makes it very difficult for the United States to be a beacon of strength. We have to make sure that we are providing the resources for our military. When it comes to boots on the ground, there are certain values and certain things that have to happen before I will agree to put boots on the ground. First of all, this can't be a decision unilaterally by a president. Congress has to be involved. Two, we have to make sure that we have a clear mission as to what we're going to do and how these people are going to be able to come out. Three, we have to make sure that there's a threat to American lives, not just American interests. And four, we have to have a way out. And if I would add another one, it would be to make sure that our men and women in uniform have all the tools that they need in order to combat, in order to reach their missions. And so those are the things I would do before I would be able to have boots on the ground.
Rebuttal time. I'm not going to ask you to quibble with each other because you made very broad statements of general support, but let me ask you specifically, why are you the best person to represent the 4th District when it comes to making this nation safer from acts of terror on our home shore? Doug Owens,
I can tell you what my approach will be. Every time I think about a decision, those are the most weighty, the most serious decisions about whether to apply American force in some situation. I will never lose sight of the fact that those are our sons and daughters. I never use the expression boots on the ground. Those are your brothers and sisters, your friends, and your children who are going into harm's way. I've been here to the Veterans Center at Salt Lake Community College, and I've seen that assistance that's necessary to make sure our vets are taken care of when they come home. I'm the best person because I'm going to make sure to weight those decisions as the most important, never losing sight of the fact that these are our people, our sons and daughters.
Representative Love.
Well, I can tell you I have made sure in the House that I support every pro-vet bill that comes. Not only are we supposed to keep the promises that we made to our veterans when they come home, we're supposed to keep the promises that we've made to their families when they do not. I have voted to increase funding for our military to make sure that our men and women in uniform have the tools they need. I have voted every time against the president when he wanted to gut our military. There isn't a vet out there in Utah that understands the work that we've done, that doesn't understand that we have been pro-vet and pro-military.
Thank you both. I promised that we would have student representation, that we would be turning our attention to the economy through those students with very personal reactions. Let's go now into our audience here at Salt Lake Community College and turn to student Gabe Moreno. Gabe, your question.
Good evening. So my question is, nearly 12% of Utahns live in poverty. What measures do you support to reduce income inequality and food insecurity, such as increasing the federal minimum wage, expanding child nutrition programs, and boosting SNAP benefits?
Representative Love, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Well, this is an area where we have worked across the aisle. I am the only Republican member in the Congressional Black Caucus, and I've been able to host members on the other side of the aisle here. So we could talk about what we've done here in Utah to elevate those who are striving for a better life, to lift poverty. Now, we have to understand that the way that Washington does it has actually hurt the most vulnerable among us. There's a difference between intergenerational poverty and situational poverty, and sometimes the solution for one actually perpetuates the other. It's important for us to make sure in Washington we give our local agencies the tools that they need in order to take care of poverty, because they are the ones that are dealing with the issues over and over again, and they know these individuals personally. And so there are a lot of people that we've worked here in the state making sure that we give them the tools. In terms of minimum wage and what the Department of Labor has been doing in terms of the overtime rule, the knee-jerk reaction for regulators is to create more regulation, and they end up hurting those that they vowed to protect. In other words, when you raise the minimum wage and you artificially raise that wage, it's very difficult for an employer who says, I have a set amount of money. What am I going to do with that? And often someone gets fired. Often people end up losing their jobs. We should be doing what we do in this state, making sure that we're creating jobs, making sure we're innovative, bring down the unemployment rate so that we can naturally bring up the minimum wage.
Mr. Owens, your 90-second opportunity to address several key issues associated with the economy.
Gabe, I appreciate your question. Let me tell you, this is why I am running. I have looked around and seen way too many families, sometimes the parents working 2, 3, 4 jobs between them just to keep the lights on, just to keep food on the table. And that's for those people that I am running for office. You know, the jobs that were lost in the recession paid on average 22% more than the jobs that have been created since the recession. What that tells you is Americans are working harder than ever, more hours, more jobs, and they're not doing as well. This is why I am running for Congress. This is the biggest reason, because I want to make sure families have the opportunity to make the right choices for them. You know, I've got a job plan that I have introduced that I hope to get the chance to work on in Congress. It's working on education, it's deregulation, it's making sure that we've got a lower corporate tax rate. No one should ever have an incentive to ship jobs overseas. It's rebuilding infrastructure. There is so much that Congress can do on this issue. This is really why I'm running. And I think you got to figure out which of us can most effectively work across the party line. I think that's the defining issue of our time. Are we going to get hung up on these national issues over and over, or can we roll up our sleeves and go to work? And you know, I've got an opponent, Congresswoman Love, who has voted 98% of the time with her party. I will tell you that no party is right 98% of the time. We do need to roll up our sleeves, work across the aisle, and solve some of these problems. I'm really proud of my jobs plan. I hope you give me the chance to put it into effect.
In rebuttal, and I want to thank Gabe for his question. In rebuttal time, I want you each to specifically respond to a question. One of Gabe's concerns was your position on raising the federal minimum wage. And you both talked about it in principle. Let me put before you the direct question. Do you support an increase to the federal minimum wage? Why or why not? Representative?
Actually, I answered the question. I believe that artificially raising the minimum wage on the federal side is the wrong thing to do. The way that we create jobs is by innovation. The way that we create jobs is by free market principles, by deregulating. I'm glad that my opponent agrees with me on deregulating because I'm part of the Article I project that is actually deregulating Congress. But we know that free markets have taken more people out of poverty than any other economic system in the history of the world. And so we have to make sure that we are bringing down the unemployment rate so that naturally people could bring up the wages and allow people to thrive.
And Mr. Owens, I'm going to give you a 45-second opportunity as well.
You know, the muscle of the American system is the private sector. I've been in the private sector my whole life. I've been in the real world helping business create jobs. I've been a business attorney for 25 years. Sometimes the government needs to get out of the way. Other times there are things the government can do to level the playing field. And I mentioned some of those important job opportunity opportunities I think Congress can bring about. The minimum wage is a tough issue because I've seen the business perspective where I know that business sometimes is unduly impacted by government regulation. It is a two-edged sword. It makes it harder to hire, but it also increases the demand in the economy. There's a lot of evidence to the effect to back up what Mitt Romney said, that it is time to consider raising the minimum wage, and that's what I want to do.
Back to our student body here at Salt Lake Community College. It's a diverse audience that we have on hand here this evening, but this is a representative of the student body, student Arturo Salazar. Arturo, your question on the economy.
Thank you. So my question is, tuition costs have dramatically increased in the past 10 years, often 2 to 3 times the rate of inflation. Yet education remains the best hope for many low-income Americans to improve their lives and those of their families. What would you do to either increase the FAFSA award amount or reinstate a year-round financial award?
Mr. Owens, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Arturo, thank you. Let me speak generally about education, then get a little more specific to you. You know, I do think of my father and my mother when it comes to education. I mentioned my dad coming out of Panguitch, Utah. He was really poor. He had a very loving family, but they had no ability to help him get on in life. It was the teachers in Panguitch, Utah, who saw in that kid something special and invested in him and helped him get on his way in life. So I strongly believe in public education, in education as the pathway, the number one pathway to help people. And this is something the parties ought to be able to work together. Let's invest in our people. Let's grow the economy. Let's enable them to take care of themselves. Let's enable them to take care of their families. This is the most critical issue for me in terms of job growth and building our economy. And it's also the most critical issue in terms of getting Congress working again. I think also of my mother. My mother was a fifth grade teacher in Rose Park. She put her heart and soul into that job, and she used her own salary to buy classroom supplies. I know many teachers are doing that. She actually one time took a fifth grade class all the way to Washington, D.C. for a field trip. That's how much she cared. And I think we've got a huge teacher retention problem in this state. We lose almost 40% of our teachers in the first 5 years. My job going to Washington is going to be to get every federal dollar I can into our education system. That is the number one pathway to get people out of poverty and being full-fledged participants in our private enterprise system in this country, which is our great strength. We just need to tap everybody and make sure they're fully enabled to participate in the economy. That's my number one goal.
Representative Love, your 90-second opportunity.
Arturo, first of all, I want you to know that I have thought about this, and this has been a concern of mine. I understand what the students are going through. When I went to school, college tuition at my school was $20,000 a year. I actually, at the age of 35, paid back all of my student loans. So think about this. Today at the same school, college education is $44,000 a year. How long is it going to take a student graduating today to pay back those student loans? The problem that we have when we have these unlimited flow of federal dollars going into higher education, it's causing the rate of higher education to rise far faster than the rate of inflation. And it's making it difficult for middle-income families and the poorest families to be able to go to school. Now, I want you to know that I know that education is a great equalizer. I also believe that family is a great stabilizer. And we have to do everything we can to put money back into the hands of families and put free market principles into our college education so that way the schools can compete for those Title IV fundings. What I've done is I've introduced three bills that does exactly that. The college, the Know Before You Go Act, which allows the schools to give us the matrix of how much it costs, how many people have been able to graduate in their area of study, and if there are jobs, have there been jobs waiting for them. We've also introduced the College Affordability Act and the HERO Act so that we can bring down the cost of higher education so that you are not spending all of your life paying back a federal government.
Let's turn to rebuttal time because I heard some differences between you two. Mr. Owens, you'll have the first 30-second opportunity.
Arturo, thank you again for that question. It's a very important one. I will say there are important things that can be done to bring down the cost of higher education. For starters, if we've got enough money sitting in the capital markets to lend to banks at 0%, student loans ought to be made at 0%. People investing in themselves, their future, and their family, we ought to be able to do that. We ought to go after these predatory private schools that load up the debt on kids and don't let them have any opportunity to pay that off ever. We can do, there's an awesome idea that came out of Taylorsville here, where they made the senior year of high school the first year of community college at no expense to the student. There are great ideas out there. There are no shortage of good ideas to make college affordable. What there is a lack of goodwill in Congress to get anything done. We need to make sure we change that up. And I'm tired of the kind of sending the people to Washington who are just looking out for themselves and forget who sent them there and aren't getting the work done.
Reminder to both candidates that the timing devices arrayed around you are not just for ornamental purposes. They do indicate the allotment of time and the fact that it is expired. So I'm going to give you 45 seconds, Representative Love, to respond on this subject of education.
There's a clear difference here between my opponent and I, and I think that's okay. This is your choice. There is a monopoly right now with the federal government, and they're the only ones that are providing these student loans. I think that we should be able to open up those markets. I think that that colleges should compete for the Title IV funding, and I think that the college institutions should also be held accountable. They have to have some sort of skin in the game to make sure that students that are graduating are able to get a job when they graduate. It's also important to realize that four-year colleges is not the only option out there, that we have skills training, that there's online training, there's accreditations that our states can work with. So we want to open up the options and give people as many options as possible.
And Representative, you will have the first response to this next question. Do you believe there is conclusive scientific evidence that human activity substantially contributes to climate change? Help us understand your reasoning on this subject and what you believe is the appropriate role for the federal government and Congress on environmental issues.
Well, the first town hall meeting that I held as a new member of Congress was in West Jordan. And the number one issue we had residents come from all over. A lot of the residents came from South Salt Lake, Mill Creek area, and climate change was one of their biggest issues. So much so that we decided that we were going to do a town hall based on that issue alone. We got a lot of our local groups involved. And what we did, instead of bantering back and forth, we focused on solutions. We had four guests that were there that talked about innovative technology so that we could make sure that we're taking vehicles off the road that are emitting pollutants. We talked about educating on the climate. You know, I'll tell you right now that a lot of my colleagues on my side of the aisle refuse to recognize that there may be a problem. And so anytime you look at Salt Lake, certain times of the year, you can tell that there's a problem with air quality. And I think that we need to focus on the solutions. Now, I don't think that we should do it at the expense of coal, at the expense of some of our other energy producers. I think this is a false choice when you say you have to have one or the other. I think that the solutions can be found right here in the 4th District. I think that we can get all of the players involved and find a solution. I think it's important for us to be good stewards of the land that we live on. that's why Clear Path has endorsed me. I support clean energy. I support all of the above. And I think that we need to do everything we can to make sure that we are getting people involved and really talking about these issues.
Mr. Owens, your 90-second opportunity.
Ken, I first want to say I appreciate your warning about those red, yellow, and green lights. And it reminds me of driving with my kids. I tell them that red light is not just a polite warning. So I appreciate that. I will try to be more observant. So climate change, yeah, there is evidence that climate is changing. There is strong evidence that humans are contributing to it. The tougher issue is, what are we going to do about it? And I look around the world and I see a need to make sure that whatever is done, it's done on an international basis. I have no desire, and I would fight any effort just to handicap our economy to curb CO2 emissions when China or some other country is growing at such a rapid rate that they're going to erase those gains immediately. So I think it's got to be done on an international basis. It's got to be done cooperatively in that sense. So it's a tough issue. Now, we've talked about jobs, and my number one issue in running is wanting to make sure that families don't have to have 3 and 4 jobs between the parents just to keep the lights on. I see a great opportunity here to mash up our two problems. We got a climate change issue and we got a job issue. We can put those together and make an opportunity here to invest in a clean energy system that we can export all over the world. So let's use our resources as a people to invest in education and in industry that's developing clean energy technologies, and then we can go export that and create good jobs at home. We need to lead on this issue, and there's multiple reasons to do it. And sometimes if you put together your two problems, you can see opportunity.
We are passing the midpoint of our time tonight, and I want to welcome you once again to this live debate between candidates in Utah's 4th Congressional District. We're on the Miller campus of Salt Lake Community College, and we thank the college and the student body for extending a warm welcome and joining us here tonight. This is the second election cycle served by the Utah Debate Commission, and that's a landmark effort in voter information with media joining together with the citizen-based initiative to provide debate coverage for Utah's federal and statewide offices. Tonight's questions are drawn from those submitted to the Utah Debate Commission at their website, all one word, utahdebatecommission.org. We encourage you to visit the site to learn more about the commission and to view previous debates presented in this unique collaboration. We also invite your comments and feedback on the election year efforts of the commission. Do it all through the website, utahdebatecommission.org. Now back to our exchange with a question from another student, Sydney Cahoon. Sydney.
According to a 2016 report by the Joint Economic Committee of the U.S. Congress, the United States is not projected to close the gender pay gap for another 43 years. I'll be 63 by then. And how will you work to close that gap sooner?
Sydney, I'm going to direct your question for initial response to Doug Owens and ask you to be gentle with people in their 60s. Mr. Owens, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
You know, I was blessed with a very strong mother. I've got a very strong mother-in-law who's here tonight. I got a very strong-headed wife. I got a very strong-headed daughter. I strongly believe in making sure that we respect women as people, that they be equal participants and make the choices, have opportunities to make the choices that anybody does. You know, 20-odd years ago when I first had been practicing law for a few years, my wife and I were looking at our circumstances. We realized that she couldn't finish her training as a pediatrician, baby doctor, if I didn't take a couple years off and stay home with my kids. So we had then 3 little boys, ages 5, 3, and 1. And I had the chance to take 2 years off from my law practice and stay home with them. It was a life-altering experience. And it changed my world and the way I look at it. I've told you about these parents that I see working 3 and 4 jobs between them, not saving for their own retirement, not saving for their kids' education. This is why I'm running. This is what I want to go to work on. I have put 2 years of my life behind the idea that I strongly feel that women ought to have every opportunity they want to go seek. And I will work to close that pay gap, and I'll work on any other issue that's going to help advance the cause.
Representative Love, your 90-second opportunity on narrowing that gender pay gap.
Okay, narrowing the gender pay gap. Okay. So, Sydney, thank you for that question. Again, it's incredibly, I have an insight in this, because I am a female in a very male-dominated area. And, you know, there are times where it's important for us to know that we have a voice out there. We should be out there. Women, I believe, are a big part of running the economy. Even though I'm a member of Congress, I am a mother. I'm a Utahn. And my first job is to make sure that I am providing for my children and that I'm teaching them not to be victims, but to make sure that they're getting the skills and the education that they need. Now, there's quite a few different ideas when people are taking in trying to figure out what the wage gap is. There are some women that choose to stay home, and that is their choice. But if a woman chooses to go out into the workforce, she should be paid the same amount of money as a male gets paid for the same amount of work. I think that there should be opportunities for women to be able to become managers, to become CEOs, to be able to provide some great innovative product that maybe we haven't seen before. Those are the great opportunities that we have. I have joined the CTE caucus, which is the Career Technical Education Caucus, and have promoted STEM education for our young women, because my daughter wants to be a rocket scientist, and me, as a congresswoman, it's my job to provide her all of the opportunities to do just that.
So in follow-up to each of you, do we leave it to the good graces of market forces that will eventually close this gap most efficiently and effectively in the private sector? Or is there a role for a strict mandate from the federal government ensuring that there is no pay gap between genders? Mr. Owens, your first 30 seconds.
No, the law should require, and it does require, that there be equal pay for equal work, and I think that ought to get enforced. And I have tried to say I believe in that, and I have tried to say that I have put my money where my mouth is in terms of trying to support my own wife and my family issues. So I hope people will see in me somebody who's personally invested in that issue.
Representative Love, do we need further regulation, or is it something that's going to be addressed through the market?
Well, I didn't hear any answers to that from my opponent, so it's hard for me to understand where he stands, but I can tell you where I stand on the issue. Whenever government gets too involved in one issue, the same thing always happens. Quality goes down, prices go up. They end up hurting those that they vowed to protect. Again, I think that the issues that we need to face is creating more, allowing for people to be innovative, create more jobs, create more opportunities for our young women to be able to get an education in all areas of technology so that they can compete in this world.
I mentioned national surveys of voter concerns earlier. One recurring theme in these surveys is a strong, widespread distrust of the federal government in general, and the Congress of the United States specifically. Our federal government is viewed as being tied into knots with partisan intransigence. It's being valued more important to stay loyal to party rather than to engage in shared problem solving. I'll assume you will not self-identify as being part of the problem. So please help me understand how you view yourself as an antidote to this toxic situation. Representative Love, first 90-second opportunity.
Well, I mentioned in my opening argument that it's important for us to bring people to come along with us. When I ran for this office, I promised that I would bring people to come along with us. David Scott, a Democrat in the United States House of Representatives, has endorsed our campaign. We have been able to go, and heaven knows how long that's been, but we've reached across party lines, and we said, forget what the party says, let's work on these issues, and we've been able to do that. In terms of more important to stay loyal to a party, I believe that I've been pretty independent in making sure I stuck with my district, especially when I didn't just go along with my party nominee just to get along. It's important for us to make sure that we're doing absolutely everything we can to bring people to come along with us. I get to talk about Utah and Utah values every day in Washington. I get to go there and tell them what we are doing great in this state and the hopes that we can get people that really care about their communities to come along, and we've been able to do that. I know that there was another question in there. I want to make sure that I got the other part of it.
Discuss the element of party loyalty,
right,
rather than shared problem solving. I think you've addressed the question. I'll reserve that time should you choose to expand it. Mr. Owens, your opportunity to respond for 90 seconds on the theme of toxic partisanship blocking shared problem solving.
I think this is the defining problem of our time. You know, we've got a broken system, a system that will not work on any of the problems that we want it to, that will not fix immigration, that will not give us an energy policy, that will not go to work on the president using armed forces around the world. Congress won't even debate what to do in Syria. We have ample trouble. We got problems that need solving. We need to have a Congress that works again. I have put out an important ethics program that I hope you'll give me the chance to go to work on. It does away, first of all, it requires Congress to begin working 5 days a week again. Right now they work 2.5 days a week. I think they should be in Washington 5 days a week working together to solve these problems. We should do away with automatic pay raises. We should do away with luxury travel. We should do with the self-promotional use of taxpayer dollars to fund mass mailers. There's a lot of stuff that we can do to get Congress working again. I hope I get the chance to do it. Because it is the defining problem of our time. I have seen a better way. I have seen times when people got elected to Congress and realized that the elections ended and then they went to work to solve problems. This is how you run your family. You don't steamroll other people. You don't roadblock other people. You work together when you have your different views. This is how you run the workplace. This is how we need to run the government. We need to get back to work solving problems together.
And Representative Love, returning to you for an opportunity, do you want to extend your comments?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are a couple of things that I really want to talk about because they've been brought up, so it's important for me to bring this up. First of all, I think that some people believe that the work, the most important work done is in Washington, where I can tell you in my experience, the most important work that I do is right here in the district, where I'm sitting across with other families that have issues, that are working through whether it's a VA problem or working through getting their benefits at Social Security, or working through being able to get their citizenship here legally. Those are the people I represent. The most important work I do is right here, and it's important for me to come home every single week and remember who it is I represent, and that is Utah. Not be in Washington and stay there and forget who I represent, but it's right here. The other thing I want to mention, and I just want to continue to go with this, the whole idea of the self-promoting mail is absolutely dishonest. I mean, both papers actually agreed that it was dishonest, and they rarely agree. This is a benefit that Mr. Owens is actually using for his own purpose. He's using this benefit for his own purpose. He understand that this is part of an entire, this is my extended time, right?
Yeah, you're into your extended time. I don't want to artificially cut you short, but if you could
I just want to bring up the fact that he didn't mention that this is part of a big budget, that we've actually saved $110,000 in the budget, where we are up on communications. We've actually decided to stay low on our employees to make sure that we are spending time communicating. And as a new member of Congress, it's important for us to let people know where we are, how to reach us. That's how we've been able to help Mr. Johnson receive the medals that he's received. So it's important to bring that up. He's being dishonest, and I think that we need to make sure that we recognize
in the context of time's management. Now, Mr. Owens, you get 1 minute to respond.
Congress has plenty of time to be home in the district. They get every fourth week off. They get multiple recesses. They should be in Washington doing business and figuring out the problems of this country that aren't getting solved. So I think they ought to work 5 days a week again. And I would do away with those mailers. You know, I have no paper has said that it's incorrect that my opponent has used $300,000 of taxpayer dollars for self-promotional mail. That's almost three times as much as every other member of Congress from Utah put together. I think that's a waste of money. You know, my son Sam got his first full-time job recently. And he comes to me with his pay stub and he says, "Dad, what are these deductions? They are taking half of my paycheck." And I know you know that disappointment. I've seen it myself. I think tax dollars are sacred, and that is a horrible waste of money, and I would stop it as soon as I get to Washington.
We're going to turn back to our student audience once again. The next question will be coming from Connor Holt, and Connor is interested in what comes after his college education. Connor?
So when I graduate with a degree in business in 2 years, I want to work a full-time job, but many young Americans are currently underemployed or stuck in part-time jobs. What is your plan to help grow the economy?
Mr. Owens, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Connor, I've told you how important I think this is. I appreciate that question. I strongly believe education is our number one pathway forward. We have got to invest in our people. You know, I've been in the private sector my whole life. I've been in the real world. I've seen how business creates jobs. I know sometimes government needs to get out of the way. Other times there's things to do to level the playing field. You know, it doesn't bother me that the kid flipping burgers is not earning what the CEO of the company is. What does bother me, and I know bothers everybody in this room, is if that kid never has a shot at that job. So let's invest in people. Let's make sure they've got every pathway into the American dream. Some people say the American dream is that you got a shot at getting wealthy. That isn't what it is. It's not how a few of us are doing. Now, I got nothing against anybody getting wealthy. But the American dream is about how all of us are doing. How, whether an everyday person can get a house in a safe neighborhood, can send their kids to a good school, and can look forward to a retirement with some dignity. So this is number one priority for me. Education is the biggest part. I've mentioned rebuilding infrastructure. I've mentioned deregulation. I've mentioned doing away with lowering the corporate tax rate and doing away with all the loopholes so that no one's got an incentive to ship a job overseas. Fair trade agreements is another thing we can work on. This is job one, and I'll get to work on it.
Representative Love.
I want to make sure that I get back to one more thing, and then I will answer your question very quickly. Where you are being dishonest is the House admin actually scrutinizes every piece of mail that we send out. And it is signed by a Republican and a Democrat to make sure that it is non-political in nature. And I'll also mention that he didn't have a problem when Matheson actually communicated more than the rest of the delegation. He did that very well. He communicated with his constituents, and I'm proud of the fact that I've used the budget to communicate as opposed to using the budget to have a massive amount of staff members. And I continue to behave fiscally responsible by returning money back to the Treasury. To your answer, it's very clear what we need to do when it comes to job creation. There are four pillars. People talk about three pillars, but there are four pillars that really need to happen. First of all, job creation through innovation, removing regulation that is really stifling our small businesses. It is harder for us to open up a small business today than it's ever been in our history. Two, we have to make sure that we are producing energy. We have to be able to be competitive on the global market. Three, we have to make sure that we simplify the tax code. The tax code makes it so that it's easier for people, for bigger businesses to be able to get through those loopholes and more difficult for our smaller businesses. And four, we have to create liquidity. We have to make sure that people have access to credit, whether it's buying a car, purchasing a house, or being able to start a business. You do those three, you do those four, you'll be able to grow the economy, and the United States of America will be competitive on the global market again.
Okay, Mr. Owens, we're gonna come back to you for rebuttal time, and recognizing that a good portion of the representative's comments dealt with the franking privilege, you have the opportunity to respond to either mailing or the economy question.
Listen, there's no issue with somebody sending a mailer that announces a town meeting. That's not what those mailers were about for one second. Those were self-promotional campaign pieces that were paid for by the taxpayers. My opponent just tried to excuse that by saying both the Republicans and Democrats do it. That's one of the problems back there. I would never do something just because everybody does it. Those are a waste of money, and I do away with them.
All right. Representative, you have an additional 30 seconds coming.
There is absolutely no response. This is just something that he is using to his own benefit to complain because he's got nothing else. So I understand that he's got a problem, so it's okay.
Well, let it go. Let me see how you respond to this question. Weekly, our headlines are stained. You technically cannot, because she waived her rebuttal time. You don't get a claimant. So I regret that, but more time will be coming. The clock is coming your way.
All right.
Weekly, our headlines are stained with reports of mass shootings in this nation. Throughout our nation, big cities, small towns, on community college campuses. In 2015, more than 10,000 Americans were fatally shot. More than 25,000 were wounded. Those figures do not include the use of firearms and suicide. Apart from going on social media and praying for the victims and their families, what is the role of Congress in addressing this issue? Representative Love, you have the first 90 seconds.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that there are people in their communities that feel like they don't have a shot. There are people that do feel like they're being targeted. And I think it's important to recognize that. But I also believe that the role in any leader would be to unify, not to divide our country. I believe that we are more racially divided today than we have been in 7 years. And I think that it's a lack of leadership on the administration side, and frankly, a lack of leadership on the in Washington. As a mayor, what I did when we realized that people were having an adverse type of relationship with our police officers, we decided that we were going to get our own police officers so that live in our own communities, so the people that they're enforcing the laws to are their neighbors. These are the same people that their children are going to the same schools, playing at the same parks, they're going to the same church, and it creates an environment where that person now is not an enforcer, but that person is a community police officer, a person who is going to help you in your neighborhood. It's incredibly important that we do everything we can to make sure that we're not trying to fix the problem at the end. We have to make sure that kids on the streets of Baltimore, kids on the streets here in Salt Lake, actually have an education, so that way they can become police officers in their own community and be able to be the role models in their communities.
I have been informed by our timekeeper that we have enough time remaining for your full response to this, Mr. Owens, but no further time. So you have your 90-second opportunity.
Thank you, Ken. I do want to go back and address one other issue. You know, I think it's important to talk about what a sitting member of Congress has been doing for 2 years. I think it's perfectly fair to point out the use of taxpayer money, and I'd do that any day of the week. I think I certainly haven't been abusing this privilege myself. I certainly have never had any taxpayer dollars in my control to use in that way. I think it's terribly inappropriate, and it's part of the ethics reform I would do if I got back to Congress to get Congress working again, to do away with those mass mailers, the self-promotion, the luxury travel, and making sure Congress works again. I think that is the bedrock of what we're going to be able to do to move this country forward, because we can't make progress on these other issues until we reform the way Congress operates. Now, to the issue of policing, my brother is in law enforcement. I want to make sure that every law enforcement officer goes home safe to his kids at night. We need to give them the resources to do their job. We need to give them the resources to have the training to stop conduct that sometimes we've seen too often here. But if we train them, if we work together, and find I am all about solutions. I am all about trying to bring people together rather than saying it's an us versus them setting. We can work together to solve our problems. This is the United States, and I believe that's how we're going to go forward. It is just like your family. It is just like your workplace. If you take account of other people who see things differently, you can work out your problems and find common ground. I've done that as a lawyer. I'll take that skill to Washington.
While I sincerely wish I had additional time to redirect that question and hone in, we've reached the end of our allotted time for the questions with the candidates, and now we must move to one-minute closing statements. Prior to airtime, it was determined that Representative Mia Love would have the first 60-second opportunity. Representative.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I have had the opportunity to represent the wonderful, diverse people of the 4th District for the past year and a half, almost 2 years, and it has been my honor and my privilege to do that. I've gotten to know you, I've gotten to know your families, and this is not just about a job to me. You've become my neighbors and become my friends. I want you to know that I believe we still live in the greatest country on earth. It's certainly worth fighting for, and it's certainly worth saving. And we should never let anyone tell us any different. You know, we are going to be able to have an opportunity here, an opportunity to make sure that Nancy Pelosi does not become the Speaker of the House, an opportunity to hold on to a Republican Congress so that we can be a check and balance to whoever is the president, an opportunity to look within instead of looking without. And I think it's important for us to be able to vote. I need all of you to be able to get out and vote. I ask for your vote. Please join me in making sure that we provide this country with great opportunities.
And our final one-minute opportunity afforded to Doug Owens.
Yes, thank you all for coming tonight. I want to give a special thanks to my family, most of the members of which are here tonight. They have sacrificed a lot to make this run possible. I appreciate that. I want to thank the voters of the 4th Congressional District. I've been out and about meeting you. I've heard your dreams and aspirations. I know you've seen better times, and I want to say they're coming back. You know, every time I've gone into a voting booth, I have gotten tears in my eyes. They have welled up in my eyes every single time. Because I think about all the people in the history of the world who've lived without that right. That is such a basic right. I think about all the people who've shed their blood to bring us that right. I hope you'll all vote. You're all going to get ballots in the mail in Salt Lake County. I hope you'll watch your mailboxes this week and get those ballots back and remember those people who haven't had that right. Thank you all very much.
My thanks this evening to Republican Representative Mia Love and Democratic candidate Doug Owens for their time. And special appreciation to the administration, the faculty, and the students of Salt Lake Community College for their support in the execution of this exchange. And also to the Utah Debate Commission, its co-chairs Scott Howell and Thomas Wright, and Executive Director Nina Sliding for their efforts to ensure public debate in this pivotal election cycle. They are prominent in a long list of people behind the scenes who have labored to bring to life the concept of commonly carried public debates to inform the voting process. Now, whether you intend to vote by mail or in person, the Utah Debate Commission reminds you, Election Day is Tuesday, November 8th. If you have questions, please contact your county clerk's office. In Salt Lake City, I'm Ken Verdoya. Good evening.